So we're in the third section of Alei Shor, in the second chapter. We started speaking yesterday about Midas. According to the Rambam, he doesn't call them Midas, but he calls them Deus. And we came to the understanding that the Midas have two facets to them. On the one hand, they are thoughts. They're the way that you understand something. And the way that you understand something will affect how you feel about it and the way that you act on it. And therefore, it's not built in. It's just your current perception of a particular topic. And that's on the one hand. But on the other hand, there are certainly things that a person is inbuilt with. That's just the way you are. That's you're not limited that way. You're not stuck that way. But you do have an inclination for certain things. So when you put these two together, then on the one hand, you do have an inclination towards certain traits. But on the other hand, you can work on them. And you're not stuck in either place. You're not stuck in the place that's the way you are, you're stuck forever. But we're not saying that if you find yourself doing something bad, then there's a problem with you. I mean, that's natural. That's the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made you. You just now you know what you need to be working on. Kasher anu ma'amikim lehitbonen b'midoteinu ma'avirim et ha'muskrot tachat shevet ha'bikoret. When we start contemplating our own character traits, and we start to be more critical in our thought about them, na'amod al ha'tawoyot shebemuskrot halu, we'll be able to identify what the mistaken concept is that underlies why we're acting in a bad way, or why we're thinking in a bad way. Meaning, the concept here is that if a person's acting inappropriately on some level, he's jealous or whatever it is, there is some false belief that he's currently holding. And holding that false belief makes him view himself and the world a certain way. And that's why he's acting in a bad way. But the moment, it's not a moment, it's a process. But as a person develops a more healthy, true, honest belief, which is in line with Hashem's real world, and then he changes the way that he's perceiving any particular topic, then at the core he'll be able to make a change. So to give an example, I once heard a very, very interesting story that there was a boy who grew up and carried with him that his parents didn't care for him. And it really affected him a lot. Like, it affected him in his self-esteem, it affected him in his relationships. He was, it was making getting married hard for him because of his just unhealthy way of viewing connections with people. And he went to speak to someone, and they said a line which, as it was developed and understood, it absolutely changed his life. The line was, "It's never too late to experience a good childhood." He didn't get it at the beginning. What do you mean? My childhood's finished. He said, "It's never too late." They go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "What's harming you now is your perception of the fact that you had a bad childhood. And that's harming you now. But it's never too late to experience a good childhood. You could go back and reframe, re-understand differently what happened in your childhood. And if you understand it better, then you could look at it in a different light. And when you don't see yourself as someone who had a bad childhood, then you won't be stuck in that negative view, and then you can develop and move forward." Anyway, it took them a bit of time to get the idea, but they got it. What turned out was, why did they view themselves as having a bad childhood? Because when they would leave to school, their parents weren't home. And when they would come back from school, their parents weren't home. And only late at night, when they would be by themselves the whole day, then their parents would be around and wouldn't really talk to them so much and basically go to sleep. So there wasn't really a healthy interaction. Shabbos was a bit different, but that was the way it was during the week, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. So Baruch Hashem, in this case, the mother was still alive. And he went to speak to his mother about it. He was encouraged to go have a conversation about your childhood with your mother and see what comes out. Anyway, he brought it up with his mother. And what it turned out was that they wanted to give him a strong education. And that cost a lot of money. So they decided they were going to work very hard. And they left to work very early. And they worked two jobs, each parent, in order to be able to cover his finances, to raise him well. Their dream was that he wouldn't feel needy. And he would have been needy because they were very poor. They didn't want him to feel needy.
They wanted to give him everything. So the reason why they weren't there in the morning or in the afternoon was for his benefit. Now obviously it would have been helpful if they would have told him that, and he would have understood that. But besides, not everyone is open. And especially in that generation, people didn't speak about feeling so much in that generation. So he suddenly was quite easily, in this particular case, able to totally reframe his childhood. Instead of defining my parents weren't at home means they don't care about me, he now defined it as my parents weren't home because they cared so much about me, after he'd had that insight. Now in that particular case it was very easy because his mother told him that. But even if there's not an opportunity to ask the mother, when you realize something is not the truth but your interpretation of the facts, right? Because it was his interpretation. Even before his mother told him, he was interpreting one way. And once his mother told him, he interpreted according to his mother's way. But either way, it's not so much about the facts, it's about how you interpret them when you don't have all the clarity. And you'll find that a lot of how you view things, and therefore how you feel, is not based on empirical evidence. It's based on you filling in the gaps and making presumptions about why you think people did what they did. You can know what a person's action is. You cannot know what their intention is. Normally. Sometimes they tell you. But even when they tell you, it doesn't mean that's their deeper intention. It could be that's what they've said, but it could be there's something deeper working within them. And it came from a different place. So this boy, this man, he then, what we say, reframed his way of viewing his childhood. He realized it came from a place of love. Still took a bit of work of like kind of relearning, but it was easy after that point. It was easy for him to relearn how to have a healthy relationship because he felt well-based, solid. It's never too late to have a good childhood, he realized. Because you can reflect, reinterpret. You shouldn't make up something which is obviously not true. Right? That you won't accept. But if there's something which you realize is a lot about your interpretation of the facts, not so much about what happened, but more about how you were interpreting it, then you have free rein to reinterpret. Because who says this interpretation is better than that one? If this one's doing bad for you and it's not necessarily true, then rather go with one that is equally valid and builds you. So when we look deeply about our midot, we'll realize that a lot of our midot, the reason why we have them is because we're holding on to some false belief. Sometimes it's a false belief like the story I just told now about your particular life story. And that was causing him to have bad midot on some level. Or sometimes it's a false belief about hashkafa, how emunah works, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates to the world. Someone has a false belief. There's a well-known story, but it's worth repeating. I've heard this story in many variations, but I'll tell the one that I first ever heard of it. There's a yeshiva in Yerushalayim called Oraita. And the Rosh Yeshiva of Oraita is called Rabbi David Aaron. And the yeshiva also attracts Baalei Tshuva. And there was one boy there who came and he became a Baal Tshuva. And the mother in America was very, very upset that her son had left the path, if you like. And she had almost a vendetta against this Rabbi David Aaron, who's the one who missionized her son. And anyway, he was getting married in Israel with Payas and everything. And she was coming for the wedding, obviously. I mean, not obviously, but thankfully she came for the wedding. But she was waiting to meet this rabbi and give it to him. Like she'd been waiting for a long time to meet this rabbi. And she finally met him. And he said, are you the Rosh Hashiva of Oraita, Rabbi Aaron? So he said, yes, I am. So he said, well, I want to tell you something. And you know, really, from the tone, you could tell it's not going to be good. He said, yes. And he said, I don't believe in God. Boom. That was her big line she was waiting to say. So he said, me neither. She was totally shocked, knocked off her feet now. And he said, what? You're a rabbi. So he said to her, listen carefully, he said, what you think God is, I don't believe in that either. Brilliant. Brilliant. And so true. If you, Robertson, would know, understand deeply and truly about a Kodesh Baruch Hu, I think it's pretty safe to say you would also believe in God. But with your false conception that you have of God, probably from some like one Sunday school that you went to when you were 7 years old, and you're like remaining with that, right? I don't believe in that either. That's very childish and probably grossly a misconception. It's amazing. Some people hold false beliefs about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then that leads them to act and feel in a certain way towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu. But because they haven't got a developed understanding of Hashem's way as well. Now, obviously, no one understands Hashem fully. But Hashem does give us enough of an understanding that we can comprehend of Him for our mission in this world. Obviously, right? He's not going to put us in this world and not be able to understand Him at all. But at least for what our mission is, what we're supposed to be doing here in this world, He lets us understand at least that much. But we do have the obligation to understand at least that much. Everyone according to their level. And people who have false conceptions about Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's no wonder that that will be challenging them in their Yiddishkeit. Because they've never experienced a true, honest relationship with Hashem. So as long as we're holding on to false belief about a midah, how a midah works, about a Kodesh Baruch Hu, or about our own life story, any false belief that we're holding on to will directly be affecting how we're behaving and functioning. And therefore the way to fix a bad midah is to start identifying when I behave the way I'm not happy with, if I behave in a way that I myself am not happy with, what's the thought? And you have to think quite deeply at this point, because, you know, it won't be the initial thought that comes to you probably. It'll be that thought, and then you have to think, and why is that, and why is that? And usually after 3, 4, sometimes 6, and that's because, and that's because, and that's because, in your own mind, I'm doing this because he annoyed me. And he annoys you because, that's not as easy to answer. Why does he annoy you? You have to think what it is. It's easy to just to blame someone else, that's easy. But now that he annoys you, why is he annoying you? So it may remain superficial for another moment, and it may say, he knows it because he's doing something annoying. That's saying the same thing, that's against the rules. You're not allowed to say the same thing twice. You can't say, I'm annoyed for him because he's annoying me. It's the same thing. So you have to think deeper now. He's annoying me because, and then you think deeper, he says, because I have a value of being honest. That's one of my values. And he's behaving in a way which is false. Okay, that was already much deeper. Now you understand your own value and why it's false. Okay. And when someone acts falsely, that bothers me because... that's way too deep. No, leave me alone. People usually think on a very superficial level. And it's so easy to go deep. It's so easy. I mean, you have to pause and think, be willing. But it doesn't take much time. It's easy if someone else does it with you. Because then you feel awkward, like, not to answer them after 2 or 3 seconds of not talking. Because if it's you, you just change topic in your mind, yeah? But if it's someone else who's waiting for an answer, how long can you keep the awkward silence? So he's awkward, not awkward. He's annoying me because I'm an honest person and he wasn't honest. And when someone acts in a way that's not honest, that annoys me because I like to be yashar. No, you're not allowed to do that. You can't use the same answer twice. So if you did that already, you have to say different. If someone annoys me because... Well, the truth is, I'm not sure that it's because I'm so honest, because I'm not always so honest myself. What do you mean? But you said honesty is a value for you. So yeah, that's it. Honesty is a value for me, and I believe in it, but I sometimes struggle with it also. And when I see someone else not doing it, then I want to like blame him and say, you see? Kind of justifies for me, in a way. Because if I'm not really always being honest, then I see someone else not being honest, and I say, it's terrible not to be honest, I guess I'm really kind of saying back to myself, you should be being honest. That's really insightful. So really, you're not upset with him. You're upset with yourself when you're just projecting on him. Could be. People don't like hearing that they're at fault, so could be. It could be. But now you can start working, you see? Now you can start doing something with it. Now it's not you're upset with them. Now it's that you're looking for a growth. Are you willing to work on it? Can you think of an example of where it expresses itself? Yeah, just this afternoon. Give an example. How could you have done that differently? We go back to imagery from yesterday. I could imagine myself doing it in a healthy way, such and such. Then you can really start working.
Hasecha v'halacha b'yachad machrim. Mahu amuskal amiti shekol midah v'midah.
You hear that phrase? That's a beautiful phrase.
Hasecha v'halacha b'yachad machrim.
You have to use both. You might think that from a logical perspective, Robin Hood makes more sense. No? They have so much money And these people don't have food. So I'm borrowing from them for pikuach nefesh, and I'll give back to them when everyone has enough money. Doesn't that sound, from a seichel perspective, that could make sense? It could make sense. I'm saving lives by taking money from people who have enough and they won't even miss it, and they're not even going to use it to buy anything. From a seichel perspective, that makes sense. But it's not the halacha. So you're not allowed to judge midas based on seichel where it's against the halacha. From a halachic perspective, it's better to daven nates. If you have a minyan and nates, and you have a regular minyan, sometimes even if you don't have a minyan. From a halachic perspective, it's better to say Kriyat Shema before the time of Kriyat Shema, and not just say Kriyat Shema with the brochas as part of davening before the time of Kriyat Shema, and not say just Shema at the beginning and then get it in Kriyat Shema with the brochas afterwards when it's after time of Shema. That's the halacha. Let's say you're home and your family haven't seen you for a year. Some people a year. Some people longer. And the minyan that your father davens at, they say Shema after the time. And you came back on Thursday evening. Daven shul Friday night with your father. And now Shabbos morning, your father's been waiting a full year to daven with you together. You say, I'm sorry, I'm not davening with you. What do you mean you're not davening with me? I haven't seen you for a year. This minyan davens after the time. Yeah, but you can say Shema before. Everyone in the shul says Shema before. It's not a problem. It's not a chatchil. There's another minyan which we don't daven at, that they say, they start davening on time and I'm going to daven there. There, the halacha says that it's preferable in one, but the seichel says you should be with your father. If it would be against the halacha, it's something else. If it's against the halacha, your mother made you pork for dinner, the seichel says you should eat it, and the halacha says you can't. Anyone else? But there are certain times where it's not against the halacha, or the halacha has a preference, and then the seichel maybe wins. And you have to weigh up the situation to know what's the best thing to do. So the way you judge is using seichel and halacha together. Mahu amuskala amiti shekomida. That he before he used the phrase muskal rishon, now he's using the phrase muskal amiti. Muskal rishon means the, what's that phrase in English? A knee-jerk reaction. The first thing that comes to me. The first thing that comes. This is what I feel. This is what I feel. It's without depth of thought. It's without processing and understanding. That's usually wrong. It can be right on certain things. It's often right when you don't remember someone's name and then like that name comes to you and then you say, no, I think it was actually a different name. Then usually the one that came to you was correct. Right? But when it's about your midas, usually the initial way you want to respond to something is usually wrong. And when you understand yourself deeply and you understand the roots of it, where it comes from, you've done that, but I want that because, and I want that because, and I want that because, and you've deeply understood where you're working from, then you have not a muskal rishon, the initial reaction, rather a muskal amiti. You have a true, as long as it fits in line with what's logical, what makes sense, and with halacha. Just now, flashback came to me. Two different incidences, both of them which had the same message. First one was less powerful. The second one was more powerful. Let me think of it. Oh yeah. My mother-in-law once was staying with us, and she's a Rebbetzin in Cape Town. And people ask her questions, and someone asked her the following question. And no, someone told her. Didn't ask. They told her. They told her that. How did they say it? They said it. Biduk lehefer. I don't remember exactly what it was. But they took a nekuda which has a truth to it, but they said it the exact wrong way. And they were like saying as a lachatchila that this is the way it's supposed to be, and it didn't make any sense. Like it didn't make sense the way they were saying it. It was it was talking about working on midas. And it was saying how that if you have a midah which is natural to you, then you should ignore it. And where you find that it's really, really hard for you, then that's your place you should be, and that's where you should serve Hashem from, and you should look for opportunities for where it's hard for you and put yourself in tests, because if you do that, then you'll become strengthened, and Hashem gives you reward according to how challenging it is, and therefore you should dafka look for those strengths. And Something along those lines. There's a lot of truth to that phrase. But it's taken the wrong way. Because you're not supposed to look for tests. Like the first thing I quoted to my mother-in-law was, we say every morning davening, Lo tavienu l'idei nisayon. Don't bring me to be tested. And lehefech, it's true that where Hashem sends you a test, if He gives it to you, then it's very true that that's an area where you could grow. But you never look for that. And lehefech, you're supposed to look for the midas which you have strength in. And when you find that you have a strength in a certain area, you know that's your strength, and you're supposed to use that and invest in that and do that well. At the time, it was said even more kind of crooked. Like even more like, that's the opposite of what makes sense. Another time when someone said to me, it didn't make sense to me. Although I did see, though, to give them merit, that their way of reading it fit in better to a particular Rambam, Mishmona Prokim. But it goes against the seichel to read it this way. And you have to interpret the Rambam, I think, the other way. And we argued about it. We looked up a portion. We found a portion each way. But to me, I think the seichel has to be machriya here. That when the Gemara says, the Gemara in the end of Kiddushin, which speaks about Rabbi Amram and Nura de Be Amram, the story where Rav Amram was a great tzaddik, and he was tempted to sin in Gilui Arayos. And the Gemara there says that the greater a person is, the greater his Yetzer Hara is. So someone who spoke to me about it, said to me, you know what that means? That means, and he meant this like sincerely. He wasn't saying it as a joke. I thought he was joking, but he was sincere. He said, what that means is, the average person who has never worked on himself and hasn't grown in Torah at all, he doesn't really have a Yetzer Hara. But the people who have the biggest Yetzer Hara and the biggest challenge, and you shouldn't let them go in a room with a woman, is Rav Eliyoshiv, Rav Avadia Yosef, and Rav Chaim Kanievsky. I said to him, that doesn't make any sense. He said, it's the Gemara. Are you arguing on the Gemara? Kol ha-godol machaveri yitzro gadol alav. The greater person is the greatest Yetzer Hara. That's the Gemara's statement. I said, at that point I hadn't looked at Mefarshim. Afterwards I went to look up Mefarshim because it couldn't make sense. But at that time I hadn't seen. I said, I don't know what Mefarshim say on that, but that's not the Pshat in the Gemara. He said to me, you can't say that. Right? Just because it doesn't feel right to you, you can't say that's not MS. I said, I agree with your statement just there. Right? I agree with you. Sometimes there's a new concept to me which I have never heard before, and I'm willing to accept that there's a new thing and I'll learn it. But this goes against not just Muskal Rishon. Muskal Rishon, Muskal Emtai, Muskal Achron, every Muskal goes against. I said, and I can tell you from my personal life experience. I remember that when I was in high school, I had more of a Yetzer Hara for these topics than I have now. Right? And I think I've grown in yeshiva. Right? And I can just tell myself, and not just really myself, everyone I speak to in yeshiva, as I see they grow and grow and grow, and as they grow in Torah and their mind is filled more with Torah ideas, then that becomes what they think about. They develop, they mature, they think more Torah thoughts, and there's less room in the mind for Gitarayis. And the Rambam himself says that at the end of Hilchos Gitarayis, the Bias Asuras. So it was Pashut, that's the Pshat. When I went to look it up, I saw some unfortunate said his way. I must give credit to the way he said it. Still doesn't resound with me at all in any way. But the other unfortunate that I saw who explained it differently say that what it means is that there are people who have more potential for Yetzer Hara. And their desire that they have is much, much, much greater. And if they would let it loose, Chas v'Shalom, they could be big sinners. But those same people, when they channel it to Torah, because they have such desire, so when that desire is channeled to Torah, their ability to become great in Torah is much greater because they're filled with so much more desire. As opposed to someone who he doesn't really have interests. And he doesn't really desire things in general. So his chance of sinning is less, because he won't be drawn to those things as much. But also when he comes to apply himself to Torah, he probably won't invest himself to the same degree in Torah, and that's his way. Now, of course, a person can always work on everything. But that's the way he's naturally formed. That's the way that I answered the Pshatim. That was the second example. And the third example that came to me was, I was once on a bus with someone roughly my age. I know, he's a little older than me. And he'd already got married, and I was just entering the parasha of Shiduchim. And so I said, oh, give me some advice on Shidduchim. And that was in like a period of my time that I was asking him for advice. Actually, I started Shidduchim already. And I realized that I didn't know anything going in. So I said, quickly, as quick as I can, get all the advice I can. And it was so interesting how everyone tells you their inner world when they give you advice. You know, they just tell you from their unique perspective about who they are fully, which is fascinating. Except for people who have like learned about it, then they just tell you good advice. But people who don't, and you just ask them, they start thinking on the moment, and they tell you their inner world fully about it. That's fascinating. Anyway, so this person on the bus in Yerushalayim, he told me, he said, you have to test her. Test her? How do you test her? He said, say you're going to come at a certain time, and don't come. And then wait like 20 minutes, half an hour, and then come and see what happens. And if she gets all annoyed and angry, don't marry her. And if she's like calm and easy going, then that's a good shidduch. I said, that doesn't sound right. That doesn't sound right. Like, why would you test her? He says, no, because how would you know otherwise? She'll be putting on a show. And then you understand exactly what he's doing. You know? When you flip that round, that he's putting on a show. Testing a girl. That was advice that just doesn't resound. Now, all those three points could fit into halacha, let's say. You know? They're perspectives. They're not halachic topics. They're perspectives. And maybe each of them has a place where it could be irrelevant or effective in certain places and times. But there's no seichel. There's no seichel in those things. It has to resound with you. It has to make sense. And even a person who's not so developed in his seichel, there's certain things that you just, it's clear to you that doesn't make sense. If you're not sure, ask someone else. Ask maybe two or three people just to get like a bigger picture. But in order to work on your midas, you have to use those two factors together. Seichel and halacha. V'aseichel mochiach. Ki ha'kas machtiyat ha'matara. When you use seichel, you'll realize anger never produces the results that you're looking for. It never does. Parents came to Rabbi Shachatovitz, the Rabbi who I told you I learned by. They said to him, Rabbi, we have a problem with our son. He's 16 years old, doesn't listen to us. So he said, oh, 16, he's already older. So when did you realize this problem? Oh, since he was 5 or 6. Since he was 5 or 6, yeah, 10 years. So what method did you try? He says, well, when he was 5 or 6, we started telling him off. He says, you tell him off, good, and does that work? He says, no. He says, so what did you do after that? So we carried on that for a few years, and then we started like really shouting at him. He says, when did you do that? So said, yeah, no, until now. Has that worked? He said, no. He said, so did you think of something different? He said, we didn't think to, but someone said we should probably come see you. So he says, so for 10 years you've been trying, shouting at him louder and louder and louder, and did you find the decibels as they raised, that it was more effective? He says, no, actually he just got worse as time went. Now there you just need seichel, you know? Just a simple seichel. You're shouting more makes it worse. So what do you do next year? Shout more? It's like, you know how you have the fly that's going at the window. Boom! Doesn't get through. Goes all the way back to the other side of the room. Zzz, boom! Didn't work. Go back to the room. There's an open door over there. Why are you flying to here and then going boom into the window? You could just fly out that window. Because people who are foolish, they say, if it didn't work, it's because I didn't try hard enough. That's a foolish thought. If you try something a few times and it doesn't work, it's the wrong method. You have to try a different method. The door's open, you can just walk right out. Not if I'm still talking, then I could keep you here for hours, but you can just walk out. But it's not, if the method's not working, the method's not working, you have to reassess. Seichel, now you don't need Torah for that. Just basic seichel you need. That's a muskal that everyone should have. Kaas doesn't work. Ki einu ma'orer haracha yitera. It doesn't cause people to have, people looking for honor, and they demand honor, that's the exact opposite of what they're aiming for. You shouldn't look for honor. But if you want honor, under the table, if you want honor, don't ask for honor. Run away from honor. Don't look for it. And maybe you'll get it. But only if you really don't want it. Then you'll get it. But anytime you actually ask or demand for honor, all it does is make people pretend to honor you and not respect you more. And if you demand more honor, they just start ignoring you. Because it's just silly now. The whole thing just becomes silly. So does that work? Does asking for honor work? No, it didn't work. I'll ask harder. I'll make sure that they honor me and call me by my 6 letters after my name. Otherwise, I won't answer the phone. Like, asking for honor doesn't work. It does things over. So you see people for years doing the same thing. Excuse me, do you think I worked for 10 years in medical school to be called Mr.? Doctor. Hey, Dr. Cohen. Thank you. Now we can talk. Please. It doesn't gain more respect by demanding the honor. It does the exact opposite. Ela la'ag v'sina. It causes people to ridicule and hate. Someone who gets angry more and more, or someone who looks for honor more and more, it's the exact opposite of what they're aiming for. And it's just a anyone on the outside can see it. Everyone else can see how it's backfiring. It's not working to what they're aiming for. It's not working. So why do they keep trying? Because they're not thinking. That's not halacha, that's just seichel. Gava einu metziotit. Sakana medumenet einu kemet k'tov. He carries on with different meanings. We'll pause over here. But as we're learning that seichel and halacha will be our guides in learning how to work on our mitzvahs, it has to resound with you and make sense. If it doesn't make sense to you fully, look at someone else doing the same thing, it'll make more sense. Sometimes you can't see yourself, you're biased. But you see, if someone else, you can ask yourself, if I would see, and if you're honest, you'll see this. If I would see someone else doing the same behavior, what would I think of them? And then it's much easier to then, like, portray. Do other people do the same thing as you think? No, no one does it. Like, so why? What's the difference? And then you start saying, there's something false in my belief here. What's going on? If you realize that other people, they don't do that, or you wouldn't respect it in someone else, then you ask them, so what's my false belief? You realize you have a false belief. And as you unravel that false belief, and you find the alternative true belief, and you cling on to that, then all the bad middles just fall away. Because they were all just becoming a thought that was false, that caused the false action. When you identify the false thought, you're able to resolve that. Shakoach. Freeman said I can go till 35. I was good with my time. Really?